It's time for our monthly Curious segment, a segment that we produce with the University of Oregon, talking about research going on at the U of O. Last fall, Phil Knight and Penny Knight, as in Nike, gave the University of Oregon $500 million for a new facility designed to fast-track research into applications. And the new Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact still has a way to go to raise its $1 billion price tag, but there's a lot of excitement already building about it. Our guest today is Leslie Lev, who is a professor in the Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services Department at the University of Oregon and a member of the Knight Campus's Advisory Board. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, John. Thank you for inviting me to join you this morning.
Thanks for joining us on The Exchange. Before we talk about the Knight campus, your own research centers on issues of child development, but I guess especially in the environment of adoptive and foster families. You've also examined the juvenile justice system, protective services, and even child trafficking?
That's right. Yes, those are all some of my core areas are around looking at children and families and include individuals from across the state of Oregon who've been adopted or in foster care or who may have had contact with the juvenile justice system.
And can you give us an overview of some of the studies you're working on now?
Sure. One project that I think would be useful to talk about is one that focused on girls in the juvenile justice system who had also been in the foster care system. And this was a project we worked with Lane and Douglas County and the juvenile justice centers there and recruited a sample of teen girls and their families who were really engaged in some pretty serious and severe problems with delinquency. And by that I mean by the time they came to us for our study, they had already had an average of about 12 contacts with the police before participation in our study. So really the higher end of delinquency, especially for girls. So in collaboration with the juvenile justice centers in Lane County and Douglas County and with some colleagues at Oregon Social Learning Center, we were able to do a study where we did an intensive intervention, a foster care intervention, for half of the teens in that population. And the other half were receiving services as usual. So it's what we call a randomized design where families were essentially, you know, by the flip of a coin, determined to either have the services that we were offering or the usual services offered by their agencies. And, you know, by the end, through funding from the federal government, we were able to follow these girls who then became young women for 2 years and then again 10 years out. So by that point, they were in their mid-20s. And just see how they were doing at that point, see whether these interventions and services were working, and in general see what outcomes are like for girls who in their teen years are in the juvenile justice system.
So the one group had an intervention level that was much higher?
That's right. The group that we focused on were placed individually in foster families who were really well trained and supported to provide parenting services, and we work with very closely with the schools as well to provide support for the girls. And the other group it was also very intensive, to be honest. The services as usual for this high end population were typically group care facilities, so they were living with groups of other young women who were in similar situations and receiving some services that way.
We're talking with Leslie Lev on the Jefferson Exchange this morning. She's a professor in the Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services Department at the University of Oregon. It's our monthly Curious segment produced with the University of Oregon. Leslie, can you give us an overview of what you're working on right now?
Well, one thing, you know, with this particular sample, we followed them, as I just mentioned, followed these juvenile justice girls into their 20s to see how they how things were going for them 10 years after they started this study. And what we found were some really interesting things. We found that, you know, throughout that 10-year period, they overall had fewer arrests as compared to the girls who did not receive our intervention. And we also saw that they were reporting less drug use than the girls in the control group. And then I think, you know, one of the most important things we were interested in is this intergenerational transmission of maltreatment and child abuse, because that's, you know, it's a big concern for our state and certainly nationwide. And what we found was that those who'd been in our intervention, in our services, reported less maltreatment of their own children now that they were parents. compared to those in the other groups. That to us, tells us that you can do something, that the intergenerational transmission of child abuse and trauma is not inevitable, that there are things you can do to prevent that cycle from perpetuating.
So would the results of this study potentially feed into a change in public policy? I mean, is this higher level of intervention more expensive, for example, and more difficult to implement?
Right. It is very intensive, but the costs are actually about the same because the alternative services are using group care facilities, which, of course, you have facilities costs and staffing costs. So in the end, there are certainly some cost savings, and an independent group from Washington State has done some cost analysis on our intervention and shown that it, on average, saves about $75,000 per individual who is served relative to the services as usual.
Wow, so you actually can save the taxpayers some money.
That's right.
How does this research then take the next step and get implemented as policy?
That's a fantastic question, right. And so I think that in some ways maybe does feed into some of the goals of the Knight Campus, is to take some of the basic research or even intervention research such as this and really take it to scale to have an impact not only across Oregon, but, across the U.S. So in this case, some of the conversations we've had recently are, potentially in partnership with OHSU, our partners up at in Portland. They have some methodologies for delivering interventions using telehealth or e-health kinds of methodologies that are one way where you can really start to take programs that we know work and get them into the hands of the people, the community service providers throughout the state in a much more broad way as opposed to just in the region where the research was originally being conducted.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Knight Campus, you just mentioned, let's talk about that a little bit. How did that initiative start? Was that something that where Phil and Penny Knight showed up and said, we're going to write this big check and we have this idea? Or was this something already percolating at the University of Oregon as a real need?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think our faculty and really have been, we have several areas of just excellence at the University of Oregon. One of those is in some of the life sciences, some of our experts in biology, chemistry, physical sciences are really on the cutting edge internationally on some of the developments in basic sciences. And at the same time, we also have some real strengths in the area of getting research out into communities and into the, giving them back to the people and populations who need these services. So, for example, over in the College of Education, we're working in 22,000 schools and in every school district in Oregon. So just, I think, really coming from the faculty at the start was thinking about how do we build on these strength areas that we already have? How do we put them together in novel ways to really kind of shorten this timeline from discovery to impact to putting things back into our communities, into the hands of our population? So that's where the ideas generated was from the faculty. And then, I think it took some real thinking about the logistics of the structure, how do we make that work, and then, communicating that to in this case, Phil and Penny Knight, and we're just extremely fortunate and grateful for their incredible generosity to help us really fulfill this vision.
Our guest today on the Jefferson Exchange is Leslie Lev, who is a professor in the Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services Department at the University of Oregon. We're talking about the new Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact, which is really a major project of the University of Oregon. Started with a $500 million gift from Phil and Penny Knight, and the final price tag looks like is $1 billion. You can join the conversation this morning by calling us at 800-838-3760, or you can send email to jx@jeffnet.org. Leslie, if the center is designed to foster cross-disciplinary kind of approaches, how's that intended to work? Can you maybe walk us through the process, at least on a theoretical level, using
sure.
maybe some of your own research?
Yeah, and maybe I'll just start big picture. I was thinking of it a little bit kind of like, forming a baseball team, right, where You have people on a team, all on the same team, playing together, but they all have different expertise, right? You have your pitcher, you have your catcher, your first baseman, your outfielders, your those who are good batters. But they all need to, they all have their specialties, but they all need to work together to really, you know, to accomplish their goal. And I think it's a parallel process for us in the Knight campus. If we had a campus full of people who were only pitchers, for example, or only expert in one area, we'd really be missing the ball here. We wouldn't be able to put it all together. So, you know, the campus is still being formed. We are in our early stages of, you know, thinking about the design and bringing in, searching for a director, which will then, and then we'll have faculty join. But some of the kinds of topics we've been thinking about, or I've been thinking about from my own research, for example, would be the work that I was talking about a few minutes ago in the juvenile justice system and the interventions that we know work. Well, one thing is we know that, you know, not 100% of kids, of youth who go through these interventions do benefit. And why is that? Well, you know, one thing we do know is that this population has a lot of early life trauma, maltreatment, and we're starting to learn more and more from biologists and neuroscientists about the impacts of that trauma on brain development. And so something like the Knight Campus would be able to bring experts in that area, in, you know, biology and neuroscience, together with some of the work that I do and others do, where we know we have programs that work, to start to give us a little bit deeper insight in terms of, okay, what's really going on at the biological level, at the brain level? How can we learn from that to then improve upon some of the interventions and services we're already delivering?
So is it true of academic research that some researchers, especially in the same field, have some maybe some secrecy and some reluctance to work with each other? Or is that more of a construct of Hollywood? Is the Knight campus going to have some policies or procedures to sort of short circuit that?
Right. Absolutely, we will have policies and procedures. And I guess my own opinion on that, honestly, is that I don't so much see us as having secrets or things that we don't want to share. Really, it's more the lack of the opportunity to be, you know, working together in the same facility and building, having those daily hallway conversations where you start to synergize ideas between one another. So I think, you know, in my mind, that's it's really been a lack of opportunity as opposed to an unwillingness to work together across individuals and across disciplines.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that higher education has been criticized for in recent years is for essentially becoming an arm of corporate America, where research originally done with public investment is turned into private profit. Has that criticism been leveled at the Knight campus, and are there policies in place to make sure that Oregonians are definitely going to benefit from this research?
Right. Well, I haven't directly heard those criticisms, but, you know, I have no doubt that they may be out there. So we will have a set of policies and procedures around this, and I think one aspect that is, you know, really a core value of the Knight campus is to have part of the campus be open to the general public for, you know, to really showcase some of the activities and work happening in the campus, but also to gather ideas from community members and society at large. So I really think, you know, our goal isn't to have sort of ivory tower science occurring, but we want to know what are the real problems that Oregon citizens, that, you know, people across the U.S. are facing, and what can we do now that we have this capacity? How can we put the talents that we have together in this facility together to help address some of those questions and problems of people, the citizens of Oregon?
So you plan to have people from every department at the U of O involved in this?
That's a great question, and I think some of that has yet to be determined. The idea is really to put together people who are going to be facilitate us in shortening the timeline between discovery and impact, and they certainly could come from across the university, in the sciences, in those doing you know, economic analysis, and those making an impact, but also, you know, in the areas of people being able to communicate science. In some of the humanities areas, as well as content areas such as research ethics.
It's the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio, and our guest is Leslie Lev, who is a professor in the Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services Department at the University of Oregon. We're talking about the new Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact at the UOO. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760. So Phil and Penny Knight dropped $500 million into this project, and that's a pretty sizable donation, but the price tag is $1 billion, so there's still a ways to go. What are you doing with other fundraising efforts?
That's another great question. Well, I'm, again, not directly involved in those efforts, but certainly our effort to, you know, in terms of the facilities and the bond currently out, we've been doing a lot of advocacy at the legislature to really showcase how this work can help, you know, setting the foundation for the facility and the building and launching this. We have just one opportunity to do this and to get it right from the start so that we can really enact the vision. That's probably the main efforts that have been happening right now. It's just we need to get this launched. We want to get it launched as strong as possible from the start to help lay the foundation for us going forward.
Leslie, thank you so much for spending a Monday morning with us here on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll have to have you back in a future segment to talk more about your own research. It sounds really fascinating. Leslie Lev, Professor of Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services at the University of Oregon, member of the advisory board of the new Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. That's our Curious segment, a segment that we have every month with the University of Oregon. Leslie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, John.